Wow. I've been hearing about this place. Not the place per se, but all of you. And it's all been good. Mr. Foster's been kind. So no worry. Well, a couple notable exceptions perhaps, and you probably know who you are. His first initial is Dave. So hopefully I won't run too far beyond the limits. It is really nice to be here. 2.5 hours for us here from our house, so not too bad from what I'm hearing. Kind of a general thing, I guess. But when you're not used to driving in the rush of traffic, you get used to it when you live in the big cities like we have in the past, and you don't think anything about it. But when you're out in the boondocks, and that's where you tend to be for a long period of time, it gets a little tight on that steering wheel sometimes, especially on Interstate 70. Well, all right, I'll go ahead and begin. So what's in a day? Well, 24 hours, certainly. And what else? Well, we have opportunities, don't we, during that period of time for dreaming and planning and accomplishments and perhaps some additional rest. If that happens to fall into your basket, that's good. You know, I find it interesting that God tells us that to him, that is, someone who lives outside the, and we'll say boundaries of time, and I'm going to say quote unquote when I talk about time, because it's sometimes different than what we think. But for somebody like him that lives outside of that, that day, that 24 hours, as he says, is like 1,000 years, and 1,000 years as one day. So all he's telling us there is that he's not limited to the time limits that we run into as human beings. And you know, Christ said something similar when they were talking about, should I forgive this person 7 times 7? He says, no, 70 times 7. Not limited to an amount, just an indication there that as many as it takes. So this 1,000 years as a day and day as 1,000 years, it's in that same sort of situation, that same kind of sentence structuring. But the boundaries that time applies, it only applies to the physical, doesn't it? It doesn't apply to eternal spirit beings. For us mortal beings, however, all of those in this room and around the world, and frankly, I don't know any spirit beings, and maybe that's a good thing right now, other than the ones discussed here. I know a few of those, I suppose. But for those of us, 24 hours in our entire life consists of just so many of those days. We have a beginning, we have an ending, and we know that God intended it that way so that we could learn a lot of things, of course. But one of the things is that our lifetime is just so many days. You know, there's a reason for that. And one of the things that we would learn from this is that even to an eternal being who works with physical things, as God does, well, time, quote unquote, a series of events passes to the point where whatever objective was set either has to be met and accomplished or not. And that time that's allowed for that, well, it comes to an end, doesn't it? Our lives come to an end. If you're building a house, believe it or not, you actually finally get to the point where you're done, you're finished. All of those kind of things have an end. And as they have a beginning, they have an end. So things are always in that cycle for us. That's what we know. So in this little speck of sermon space, among all the other events that you can think of, all the other events going on at this particular moment, this particular juncture, I want us to look at why limited physical beings, such as ourselves, must only as we're directed, compare ourselves to our unlimited God. Why is that? Why does he tell us to do that? Why to him? So please ask yourself this. Here you are, sitting here, asking yourself this now. Am I satisfied with where I'm at in my conversion? Well, I think most of us would go, not really. So am I progressing? And do I have the right frame of reference for this spiritual journey during the days of the physical life that God has given me? Well, I think that's probably something that we think about from time to time. I'm sure it is. But that subject that I just mentioned there about our conversion, about where we're at, about are we happy with our progress, it is most effectively looked at when we put ourselves and all things we know into comparison with the greater context of our eternal God. Turn over to 2 Corinthians chapter 10. 2 Corinthians chapter 10. Beginning in verse 12. We'll just do verse 12 and 18. 2 Corinthians 10, verses 12 and 18. For we dare not class ourselves or compare ourselves with those who commend themselves, but they, measuring themselves by themselves and comparing themselves among themselves, are not wise. Verse 18. For not he who commends himself is approved, but whom the Lord commends. So, we can tell that God makes it very clear to us that we are not to be comparing ourselves to other human beings. Why is that? Well, we're flawed, we're limited, and comparing ourselves to others isn't wise. In other words, it doesn't produce good fruit. Because there's other things that happen once we go down that road. We'll talk about some of that a little while later. But if we compare ourselves against our perception of others, because we won't always know the whole story of someone else, will we? And if we're trying to compare ourselves to them and their situation, not even knowing what their whole situation is, really, then that leaves us on the short end of the stick and we don't even realize we're there. So we should be only commending ourselves, or comparing ourselves rather, to God. Now, what I want to do at this juncture here is to take some mind-expanding thoughts here about God to the best we're able to with our little limited minds, our little physical brains, what little dab of intelligence we've been given, and I don't mean that as an insult, it's just we're limited. That's what we are. You know, we say, take this subject about power. People in general are interested in power, aren't they? We see a whole civilization built on power, on wanting power, using power. And I'm not talking about electricity. I'm talking about power amongst people. Well, there's a saying that God is all powerful. Have you all heard that at one time or another in the past, perhaps? God is all powerful. But that term is a human concept. And anything that's human is limited. And many times isn't adequate to do the job. So here's what I want to do. Everyone sitting out here is a despot, is a dictator. We each have our own little country. We run everything in that country. Everything that goes on in that country is ours. The army, the economy, the people, it's ours. Your little country is the same way. So if we happen to control all the weapons and anything else that provides strength for our control, then we hold all the power, don't we, in that particular country. And in that country, we are all powerful because we've got it all. We are the guy, the woman, whatever the case. But we're the person who handles and controls it and says what gets done and what doesn't. We're all powerful in that context. Excuse me. Sinuses here. They're a continual drain on me, but nevertheless, there they are. But God doesn't just hold all the power. If we say God is all powerful, actually, the term all is limiting in itself. It's taking what it sees, or what you may see, as all of it, and we're applying that to God. For you see, God, he doesn't just hold all the power that there happens to be. He is the source of all power. And he is without limit. Except for, as we know, any limitations that he places on himself through his character. Perfect, righteous character. But he is the sole source of all power. And he's without limit. So that's just more than holding all the power, isn't it? There's no end to his power. There's no end to his abilities. Now, there are a couple of terms here, and we're all familiar with them, finite and infinite. But I'll just touch on what the meanings are so we're all on the same page. The term finite means bounded or limited in magnitude or spatial or temporal extent. So finite means beginning and an end. It's limited. And of course, infinite means that it having no limits or boundaries in time or space or extent or magnitude. Infinite is without limits or boundaries. And we know that God is infinite. He has no limits on his intelligence, on his wisdom, his power, his creativity, his forgiveness, his mercy and love. All of these things, God is unlimited. And let's face it, the things that we can't even bring to mind, he has no limit as we do. If we say that we're patient, can we be taken to a point where all of a sudden we've come to the end of our patience? Or if we have money, can we say that we come to the end somewhere down the road of that money? So no matter what you look at, human beings are limited, but not God. God is unlimited. So just keep in mind a little thing like that, and this is just bringing out one, just illustrating one point about this whole subject of time or the power, this all thing. It's just a human concept. So we have to start remembering and thinking about the human brain. It's limited. Our minds are limited. God gives us a great deal of creativity. He gives us a great amount of intelligence for human beings. He gives us so much, so many talents. But each and every one, no matter what it is limited. All of those things are when it comes to human beings. Now, what about time? I mentioned that earlier in the introduction, saying that God lives outside of those constraints. Well, time only exists, as we know, and I'll say quote-unquote again, time, that is, only exists in the physical realm. And it's measured how? How do we measure time? By physical events. In other words, planet Earth turns on its axis one revolution, and what is that? That's a day. Well, a day and a night, but it's a 24-hour period, roughly. And then the Earth revolves around the sun one time, and that's a year. And we can go into all these other things, but these sorts of things define what we call time. It took 2.5 hours to drive here. How do I know that? Well, I looked at the clock. That little clock goes around, and it's set by some big clock in the sky someplace, and it keeps fairly accurate time. Otherwise, I wouldn't have a clue. And what's 2.5 hours? Well, it's a part of a day. So you can see that all that we do is we build constructs to determine and to measure all of these things here, like time we're talking about now. Now, some have speculated, and I'm sure you've read it from time to time or from opportunity to opportunity, that time is another dimension. Have you ever read that or heard that sort of thing? Well, to understand this properly, let's keep in mind, like, say this room here. All right, this room has a certain length or depth, if that's your preference, width and height. So it's a three-dimensional object, isn't it? And I think some people feel that, well, time, you know, it's kind of bound up and made up of past, present, and future. So it is theorized that perhaps it is another dimension, but it actually is not. And I'm not here to get involved in metaphysics and all that sort of thing, but really more than anything, to make us start thinking about some of these concepts to a degree at least, so that we can see that when we compare ourselves to God, we're comparing ourselves to a being who, well, our words and thoughts fail us when we're doing that exercise, when we're trying to compare ourselves to the eternal. So time isn't really an additional dimension. And as I mentioned in the introduction, God's not restricted by time. But saying that, as I said before, that a day is 1,000 years and 1,000 years is a day, he's showing us that time doesn't confine him. He's not limited by our ideas, our concepts, like we're going to live. How long are we going to live? I don't know. I'm too old now. I could tell you how old I am, but you'd all just fall over in shock. How could that guy be so ugly and be only that old? Or some other variation on that. But he's showing us that time doesn't confine him, because time is simply a way that physical beings count physical events so that we have some frame of reference. Back when this happened, and there's been this whole chain of events happening since then to right now, and I'm standing here and you're wishing I wasn't, but I am. And the chain of events goes past this moment till after, and it just keeps on going. Now, we would call that time, but that's just our minds trying to conceptualize the passing of events. You haven't read anything in here about time travel, have you? And God doesn't even touch on that, because it's not a reality. There's nowhere to travel to. So, but humans love to talk about that stuff and write about it. I read some of the things, and it's interesting, but it boggles my mind that they're writing about some of these things. But God plans and executes his plan, and he does so with every possibility considered. He doesn't have to travel into what we might call the future to straighten out some mess that developed because of somebody over here did something that goofed up the whole timeline. But his plan is so meticulous and perfect that he even builds into it variety or variation. You remember Hezekiah, King Hezekiah. It was Isaiah went in to talk to him, wasn't it? Yep. You're going to die, Isaiah. Put your things in order. This is what God has said. Isaiah hadn't even got out of Dodge yet when God said, well, go back and tell him I'm adding 15 years to his life. Joshua's longest day. I mean, there's a lot of things in here that we find that God said, well, this is the way it's going to be. And yet, later on, he, as he said, changed his mind. Did he change his plan? No, he did not. He simply made allowances for other things to occur, other events, because we're not predestined. But yet his plan goes out into that chain of events, and it works out. But he does that because he is infinite. He is unlimited. He can plan perfectly, execute perfectly, and bring it about as he says. He knows the end from the beginning. We, for the most part, can't know the end of the hour from the beginning of the hour, because too many things take place that are way beyond our ability to know, or to keep track of, or to control. But God doesn't have that problem. He has, have you thought about this? He has eternity planned out. He is bringing us as his children now through this process of conversion, growth, to a resurrection where we will be spirit beings like him. And we will be doing that with no end of days. We will be doing that eternally. His plan doesn't stop, and he has it covered. Now, how could one of us, even if we turn perfect all of a sudden, which isn't going to happen, but how could one of us even imagine planning things perfectly so that the result would come out exactly as we said an hour from now, or a day from now, or a week from now? God, being unlimited, has this planned out for eternity. So he plans and executes his plan with all possibilities considered, and even allowing that variation. Because he understands and teaches us that being proactive is a state of being. It's his state of being. It's his state of perfection. And so again, we're all on the same page. Being proactive is controlling a situation by causing something to happen rather than waiting to respond to it after it happens. That's what his plan is all about. He is proactive perfectly in an unlimited fashion. He wants us to learn that so that we can be that way ourselves one day. Now we just get to practice it for an hour or a few minutes maybe before things go south. Best laid plans of mice and men, I think, is one of those expressions. So as the scriptures say in another place, he does know the end from the beginning, and that's how he does it. But we can't understand that. We can't really grasp it. Oh, we can read the words. We can grasp the words. But to understand those concepts, our little minds just can't handle the load. It's like having a pickup truck that's there to pick up a mountain. Can't be done. It can't be done. We say time passes, but really, what passes is us. Time doesn't pass. We just are born, we grow, we slowly decline until we don't. It means we die. But time, quote unquote, it doesn't pass. But this series of events continues along the way according to God's plan. Think of it this way. As I said earlier, God has no beginning or ending of days. Now, everything that we know, from the time we're born to the time we die, everything in between is what? Well, it's limited. It's physical. All things physical are limited, and we are limited. Our thinking is limited. So it's just natural for us. We can't think any other way. We can't think in infinite terms like God does. So you see, there's quite a contrast there between us and him. And I know we realize these things intellectually. We know that, hey, God is all that, and we're just, you know, nothing over here. But when we really start thinking about those concepts, then our minds start to get a little bit of a grasp on the unbelievable differences between us and God. And it's not that we don't have some similarities. He made us in his image. But that's like not much comparison there, is there? And that's one of the things he wants to get across to us. And how about this one? You know, when we're resurrected to spirit beings, we will be immortal. We will not die. We will live forever. We will live eternally. There will be no end of days for us. Yet God and the Word, the Father and the Word, have no beginning of days. Now, it's easy to read that, but think about it. How many billions of years old is the universe that He created, that God created? And the angels were there before or prior to Him creating the physical universe. So how old are they? Well, I don't know. Billions upon billions upon maybe trillions of years. But God created them, and He and the Word were there then. But He says emphatically in more than one place, I have no beginning of days. Can we even begin to comprehend what that means? How can we? Everything we've ever known, everything that we've ever thought, has a beginning, as it has an ending. So to say that we won't have an ending after we are spirit beings is true. Can we really grasp not having an ending? Well, if our minds are a little bit able to say, well, yeah, I can kind of picture just kind of living on, living on, living on, living on. But can we picture the Father and the Word not ever having a beginning? No start. Always. No beginning of days. So that gives us a little bit of insight into our minds, our limitations. Because frankly, that's one there that I just can't, and I'm sure none of us can here, get a grip on that at all. It's interesting. It's a great concept. I mean, I love hearing about it, and I'm glad that there are those that applies to, those two individuals. That's wonderful and helpful for us, certainly. If you're going to depend on somebody, that's the guys to depend on that never had a beginning of days. Hebrews chapter 1. Hebrews chapter 1. Hebrews chapter 1, and we'll begin in verse 10 through 12. Hebrews chapter 1, verses 10 through 12. Of course, he's quoting from the Psalms here. And you, Lord, in the beginning laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. They will perish, but you remain. And they will all grow old like a garment, like a cloak. You will fold them up, and they will be changed. But you are the same, and your years will not fail. So even this tremendous physical universe that God created, it grows old and it dies. Suns die, galaxies die. All the phenomena built into the universe is decaying and is dying. All things physical are limited and they end. All things. So our little brains think in terms of limitations automatically. We don't even think about it. It's natural. It's what our brains just do. We don't have to ponder it every time. Well, am I being limited in my thinking here? You hear people talk about thinking outside the box. Well, it's a nice expression. And yes, there are some ways maybe we haven't thought about something. But even those ways, the outside the box ways, they're limited. So though we're generally, though, unaware of our thinking being that way, we have the best intentions sometimes. We want to do things in a right way, and we do. We strive for that. But again, compared to God, can we even imagine Jesus Christ, a human being, that he was born, he gave up the Godhead to become a human being, and he was perfect. From the time he became a human being to the time he died as a human being, he was perfect. Perfect. Can we even imagine that of ourselves for like 5 minutes? But yet he lived a physical life perfectly. And he was a human being. Now, granted, he had God's Spirit, unlimited, as he says, filled with and beyond. But that wasn't the key. The key was his character. Perfect, righteous character. But, again, it's just an exercise in brain stretching to think about a physical human being that was perfect. But yet we're not. And that's not to put us in a discouraged mode. That's not to make us feel, woe is me. Because sometimes this life's pretty rough, isn't it? All the things we go through, the difficulties that we face, aren't they really sometimes more than we can bear at times? But yet God is showing us something well worth waiting out this life for. That's what he's trying to do. Actually, that's what he is doing. We're the ones trying to remember that. Let's look over at 1 Corinthians chapter 13. 1 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 12. Scripture that we're all familiar with. For now we see in a mirror, dimly, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I shall know, just as I also am known. And if you look up some of these words in here, it just means, when it says look in a mirror dimly, it means darkly, that it's obscured. So when we look into the things of God, and some of us, frankly, in the church, down through the ages, if I'm permitted to use that expression, vast amounts of knowledge and understanding for human beings. But even that is, and if you look it up, it's darkly or obscured. What we can see, whether we realize it or not, is dark. It's obscured. It's not blacked out. We see a little. We understand a little. But then he says face to face, meaning after the resurrection, we will see God as he is, and we will know who we are, because we will see him, and we will know that we are directly like him. It says, now I know in part, but then I shall know, or I shall be fully acquainted. I only know in this infinitesimal, itty-bitty little thing here that I know, but then I will be fully acquainted with God, with who he is, what he is, how he works, what he does. Just as I also am known, and that's the same word there, as he knows us now. He knows all about us. He knows everything that there is to know about our bodies, how many hairs on our head. For some of us, it's much easier math work than others. But he knows. He really does. Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5. Jeremiah chapter 1 and verse 5. And if you're wondering if I'm ever going to get around to what I started out with in the beginning with this, yes, I will. Jeremiah chapter 1. Bear with me. I'm limited. I really am. If you don't believe me, just ask my wife. She knows. Jeremiah chapter 1, verse 5. God is speaking here to, of course, Jeremiah. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Now, we're not prophets. We're not designated to be prophets as he decided Jeremiah was going to be. But it's not just talking about that. It's talking about who God knows. I formed you in the womb. I knew you before you were born. I sanctified you. You know, before we were born, God knew when we would be called. That's the predestination that the Bible talks about. He just knows when we are going to be called. He knew that about us. Going on, before you were born, I sanctified you. I ordained you a prophet to the nation. So God did all that before he was even formed in the womb. So does God know us? Do we have to explain ourselves to God? We think we do, don't we? We go to him in prayer and we cry our eyes out, or whatever it is we do, we wear out what knees we have left, and we explain, oh, God, oh, this is, this is so difficult. Oh, I need your, you know. Does he not know all that? Well, he knows all that and everything else that we don't know about that. But he wants to hear it from us, doesn't he? So I'm not belittling that. I'm just saying he knows. Lamentations chapter 4 and verse 2. Lamentations chapter 4 and verse 2. Not a book that we jump to just often. Lamentations chapter 4 and verse 2. Lamentations chapter 4 and verse 2. The precious sons and daughters of Zion, valuable as fine gold, valuable as a extremely rare commodity. How they are regarded as clay pots, the work of the hands of the potter. So, God's called, his elect are precious to him. Valuable, and in other places it would even say more valuable than fine gold. And we are of the dust of the ground, though. We are those clay pots. And he is the potter. And we are the work of the hands of the potter. Because you see, the potter is in charge. He's in control. He molds, he shapes, he creates according to his will, according to his purpose. And we, as a result of that, are who we are today because of his purpose and his will. So God shapes us for our purpose. Because why? Because he knows the end from the beginning. He shapes us, and he knows what awaits completely. In every sense of that word, he knows. So we're still talking about comparing ourselves to God. Okay, have you ever wondered who Lucifer compared himself to when he was still Lucifer? Maybe not. Maybe you have. Well, I don't have total answers to that question. But in my mind, in my thought, as I've thought about this, I've thought, well, I think for a long while, he did what God said. He compared himself to the Father and the Word. That's who he compared himself to. And we know that his creation was something, because he was the sum total of beauty, of wisdom, of majesty, we might say. Of the angelic realm, he was the guy. Now, we know he was an archangel, and we suppose that there were at least two other archangels, Gabriel and Michael. But then somewhere along the line, looking at all the rest, like him, he started comparing himself to the other archangels. And then he started looking at the unwashed. the great masses of the angels, the rest of the guys. Who are these people? They don't even begin to compare to me. I'm wonderful. I'm beautiful. I am who I am. Look at me. Gabriel, he won't shut up. He always goes and talks to people. And Michael, well, you know, he's just a book player. He just, everything has to be just by the book, you know. So in his own mind, he started out as Lucifer, comparing himself to God, to the Word, knowing that even though he was perfect, that he was a spirit, an immortal spirit being, compared to them, who was he? Well, he was a beautiful bauble, but that was about it. He was a servant, yes. And God used him and liked him and all of those things. But then his thinking got going the other way, didn't it? He looked at those other angels, the other archangels, and all of a sudden, they were beneath him. And then his thinking progressed. You hear this term, well, you must evolve as a person. It's kind of that buzzword. None of us evolve. But mean change, grow, improve. So then his thinking evolved, didn't improve. It just became and started to be corrupt. His thinking became corrupted because of his own vanity and pride. We know these things. But I see this as the process of how this may have taken place. I don't know. Just putting it in my mind and what I read, that's the way I see that. His vanity and pride swelled, and him right along with it. He swelled. He became this enormous, wonderful being in his own mind, to the point where I should be in charge. The Father over here, he's fine, but you know what? He's got his issues. And the Word, well, he just goes along with what the Father says all the time. We need somebody more dynamic here running this thing. We need to see progress. We need to see things move. We need change. And I'm just the guy that can bring it. Of course, I'll be on top bringing it. I'll be on charge. Yes, he would be. So he compared himself. You know who he compared himself to? Himself. He only had one individual, one being that was so magnificent that he could compare himself to, and it was every time he would look in a spiritual mirror, he was so pleased. He was so wonderful. That's who he compared himself to. Because all these others created like him. Riffraff. So since he found everyone else inferior, including God the Father and the Word who became later, as we know, Jesus Christ, that his own vanity crowded out the truth from his thoughts. The corruption crowded out the truth, and that truth was he was still only who he was created. He was limited. Vast power, vast, immortal, all of these things that we aren't, but that's all he was. But in his mind, he became this wondrous thing that could just handle everything and do everything. And he became Satan. And therein lies the treachery of our own thoughts, our own human thoughts. Not only will Satan fuel them, but our own thoughts will follow that same track when or if we compare ourselves to others. Isaiah chapter 45. Isaiah chapter 45 and verse 9. Oh, and I did, hard to believe. Title, if you need one, Comparing Ourselves to God. I forgot about that earlier. Isaiah chapter 45 and verse 9. Isaiah 45 and verse 9. Woe to him who strives with his maker. Let the potsherds strive with the potsherds of the earth. Shall the clay say to him who forms it, what are you making? Or shall your handiwork, in other words, the pot, say, he has no hands? So what he's saying here is that we come to a point, if we allow that type of thinking to go on, as Satan did, where we begin then to strive with our Maker. We strive with our Father and the Word, because we're on a path to glory, as we see it, to becoming far more important in our own minds than we actually ever are in our station at the present. Woe to him who strives with his Maker. Shall the clay say to him who forms it, what are you making? So here we are, we're the pot. And while the Maker is making us, shaping us, creating us, we're talking to him and saying, what are you making? I should be better than this. I'm destined for great things here. I'm only this, you know. You should have given me a brain. You know, kind of like the scarecrow. You should have given me... How come I have to be content with what you've done here? This is us striving against God, wondering why we weren't given this, that, and something else. Or shall your handiwork say, in other words, the pot then says, once he's striving and arguing with God of all people, of all beings, then we can get to the point where we can say, he has no hands, meaning, you have no talent. You're creating me. I know better what to do than you do. Have we ever gone to God and basically said that to him? Maybe not in those words. God, you have to answer the prayer this way. This is what I have to have. I know what's best. Maybe we don't go that far and say all that stuff. But we do get wrapped up in what we want, don't we? And we go to God and we say those things in a way of speaking. And if we aren't careful about that, we can see then that we're shunting God's will aside because, really, God, you have to see it my way. Are we saying he has no hands? That he doesn't know what he's doing? Well, that's where Satan wound up. He didn't know what he was doing. So, we should only compare ourselves to God. Isaiah 55. Isaiah 55, a few pages over. Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9. This is a goodie. Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9. For my thoughts, God speaking, are not your thoughts, nor are your ways my ways, says the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts than your thoughts. We know this. We know that God's ways aren't our ways, that his thoughts aren't our thoughts. I mean, we get that. We read it. Yeah, okay, it makes sense. Yeah, I get that. But we've missed so much by just reacting in that way. Think about it this way. Paul described the heavens, didn't he? And he said there are how many heavens? Three, right? There's the atmosphere. How high does that go? 12 miles? I don't know. Before the air just, it's gone. It's a ways. And then above that is what? The physical universe. That's the second heaven. Well, how far is that? Well, man, with all of his instruments, his Hubble telescopes, his calculations, his brain power, cannot say how big the physical universe is from one end to the other, from the top to the bottom, from this side to that side. We have no idea. No idea. And then we have the third heaven, where God's throne is. It's a spiritual creation. Whatever it is, it's spiritual. It's spirit. It's not physical. His throne is on the sides of the north. What does that even mean? I don't know. So when he says, my thoughts are not your thoughts, my ways are not your ways, for as the heavens, plural, are higher than the earth. Okay, how high are we talking? We got the atmosphere. We got the physical universe that we can't measure. Trillions of light years. I don't know. And then the third heaven, how big, if I can use that term, talking in limited terms here, of course, that's how high God's thoughts are than our thoughts. And when we think about it that way and look at it that way, we begin to get a glimmer that, you know what? It's a good thing that he came down here and spoke words to us, because how can we even begin to understand how different are his thoughts and ways than ours? Not necessarily different in the sense of right, wrong, and all of that. But his ways are his ways. They're not our ways. Now, we're trying to adopt those ways, aren't we? We're striving to overcome, to change, to grow, aren't we? So when he says, my ways are higher than your ways, boy, did he sneak something in there that we didn't even pay attention to. I mean, for the most part. We cannot calculate. We cannot discuss. We cannot describe how high that, from, like it says, from the earth and above all three heavens. We can't even, no matter what figure I throw out here, it's inadequate. Totally. So the point of this is that once we begin to see that there is no true comparison with God, between us and him, once we begin to get a glimmer that there truly is no comparison, once that starts to hit home, then we begin to realize that God is all, and I'm not using all in the sense of it being defining a specific amount, but he controls all, and that only God is worthy of our attention and worship. Now, am I saying that there aren't things in this life that are good or that we can enjoy? No. Am I saying there aren't things to learn and increase and grow in? Am I saying that's not true? No. But when we actually compare ourselves with God, he's pointing out to us that all of this that we think of, all these things that we, in this world, in this physicality that we reside in and think in and grow in and develop in, it's a petri dish, yes. We're here to do, to grow, to do certain things. But beyond that, he's showing us that what is important is what's waiting for us, if I can use the term, on the other side. That's all I got. I'm sorry. That's what he's showing us. If we really meditate, really think on this difference between us and God, that's what he's showing us. And why is he showing us that? He's showing us that so that we realize that we are less than nothing as human beings, but we will someday look at him face to face because we will be just like him. But we get all the limitations. We get all of this finite stuff, our thinking, our lives, the planet, the physical universe, all of it. Beautiful stuff, limited, temporary. That's us, too. And that helps us then at least to understand that in that sense, if I can use this term, that we have to earn our stripes. We're not earning salvation. We are striving for it. We are working toward it. That's our part. But what he offers is something that we can't even describe. Oh, we can say, oh, yes, we get immortality. We become unlimited except for the constraints of our own perfect, righteous, holy, godly character. But can you imagine a ball team of those kind of beings? The game, you know, would have to be increased a bit, to say the least. So I think we're getting a sense of how minuscule we are compared to God. We have a supreme being with no limits, and on the other hand, we have humans called of God, but limited in every way. And many ways that we can't even call to mind. They're there, though. Betcha. Gonna be there. Every one of them. One day, if we live long enough, we'll discover too many of them. It gets a little tiring looking at some of those things sometimes, but that's the lesson. That's the lesson. God is truly in the process of increasing his family. With no beginning of days, he and the Word have existed in perfect harmony. Perfect harmony. Another concept to think about. Can't even grasp that one either. But together, we're created as physical human beings to become just like them. And their perfect harmony is, of course, a reflection of their perfect thought and being and holy, righteous character. That's where all of those things come from. So God is showing us that same way and providing all the necessary elements and ingredients that we need to become his perfect, infinite children. Again, with limits placed by our own unchanging, holy, righteous character. So comparing ourselves to God, well, that's what we have to do. We have to learn to do that. Hebrews chapter 10, verse 7. Then I said, behold, I have come. In the volume of the book, it is written of me. This is talking about Christ. I have come to do your will, O God. That's something Satan wasn't able to learn. That is what we are here in this limited state. Not even, as he says, the nations are but a drop in the bucket compared to him. Well, they're not even that, actually, but he's being kind. So each one of us are far, far less than that, aren't we? But yet so important to God, and that's another thing. Like David said, God, why are you mindful of man? This great eternal being, no beginning of days, no ending of days, created us, and he looks on us with love, devotion. He trusts us. Have you thought about that? He trusts us to take all the things that he's given us, his Spirit, converting us, helping us understand what we can, and he trusts us to do the right thing, which is his will. His will, like Christ says, I have come to do your will. That is the purpose that we have to look forward to. And we know his will extends without end. His purpose, his plan, and we're there, we're going to be there to help him do that will. Because that's a part he gives us. Now, I have a few other scriptures that I'm not going to turn to. They're just reminders of things to do that we have to look at ourselves in this life to take care of. You know, taking care of business is TCB. Elvis Presley, that was his motto. It's on his, I'm sorry, it's on his tombstone. It really is. Taking care of business. This is what the Father's business is to show us that we don't even have a clue as to how great that He is, but yet He has taken us, little minuscule nothings, to give us enough of a glimpse of that so that we will want and will do what's needed, His will, to look Him in the face one day as an immortal spirit being. So we're here and alive to learn to trust God, to believe what He says. We do that by seeing how we as beings are limited in every way. And yet God, seeing that He is unlimited, infinite, even though we don't understand really what all that may culminate to, what it ultimately is. But that enables us then to better realize that we have truly no purpose whatever other than to become just like our Father and our elder brother. And once He knows what our decision is, in other words, we're called, we've chosen this way, we're working through our life this way, just like He did one day with Abraham when He said, "Now I know you, Abraham. I know what you will do." One day, whenever that is, maybe it's already occurred for some of us, maybe a lot of us. He looks at us and He knows what we will do. He knows what we will become. Because we've decided to join Him in all of that. So we'll join Him and His family through the resurrection to spirit life. And again, we stretch our brains. We don't get to the bottom line yet because it's perfect life with no end of days.